Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about planning for a research paper. Now, this is a podcast while driving, so you'll hear some car noises. It's going to be a little bit more complicated, I think. Just not the podcast, but driving up, because they've changed the traffic conditions up at my favourite, or the only intersection that I know about. So we'll see what happens here. Okay, so the overall idea is that there's a general podcasting. I'm struggling to do the podcast from New Scientist, where my reading was just dreadful and appalling. I'm doing podcasting. Oops, just make sure I don't crash in the middle of this. So I'm doing general podcasting, and I've got to look at, as I develop, progressing through a series of obstacles, not directly using the standard version of trying to grow your audience and stuff like that. I'm looking at the more technical aspects of it, i.e. Getting the software together that's automatically produced. Let's have a look going up here. There's some definite arrows. Oh, yes, you can't. Oh, this whole intersection is closed off. That's rather refreshing, in fact. Before it used to be absolutely a disaster to get through. No, so they're removing stop signs here from here completely. Okay. Yeah, so there's that. There's the automation software going across. There's the idea of support things. There's multiple choices, word searches, and eventually there's an audio word search. So some of these are sort of innovations for me, or and some of them are outright innovations. Oh dear, so this is where we see the world change a little bit. So I'm making a comment here as I'm very unusual feeling doing this. So we've got a new intersection. Yeah, so some are innovations for me, which I have to sit through. Some are innovations for the world in general, i.e. the ability to have podcast multiple choices. But overall, there's a number of things which gather a group of ideas together, like the app gathers all podcasts together, and then rather than podcasting on the favourite issue, I will read an entire science magazine or read an entire book. And those books are written, and those magazines are written from a standpoint, and they come through and they produce conclusions which don't tile neatly into your worldview. It's often contradictory conclusions. They're not all the way through. Now, this brings up a generalized problem of how people deal with non-conforming information which doesn't quite go as their worldview. I can just talk very briefly. The talk on the platypus had many. This is the book on platypuses. So platypus is a small Australian animal. Oh, it's sort of 30 centimeters long. It's a foot long. It will fit on your page length. It's actually a rather small, cute animal, and it's a it's sort of a animal which diverged from the it's a mammal, but it's a mammal which has kept its family line diverging from the dinosaurs a long way time ago, and this particular animal was, it's an animal, it's alive, it's quite populous in Australian rivers, although I've never seen it. It's very secretive, very intelligent. Let's give you an idea. It's equivalent to a fish because it lives inland above, but its burrow is underwater. So its burrow entrance, there's a burrow entrance on the outside of everything that's just for show, but its main way it gets into the water, it never goes above the land. It's quite an amazing animal. Now, the sort of aspects of this is that this animal itself was non-conforming, and so what white people did was they came out and shot thousands upon thousands of them just so they could nail it and make sure it fitted in with its with their view that it must have give birth to live young. That laying an egg is a bit of a head scratcher. You know, what was going across? It had massive implications. This animal, which is living by itself, had massive implications outside its own system. So, for scientific reasons, the beliefs between creationists and evolutionists, of course, the locals is sort of like your evolutionary poster child of evolution, and so therefore this animal actually does exist, yet the relationship to it was very tense. Lots of shooting of it, lots of arguments about it. The animal itself was living quite well. Now, you can see this overall thing of information systems and the fact that people are very concerned that everyone believes the same information system. That is, the structure was not only, it was two components of the structure in Europe which had problems. One was that they believed up the wrong track, which is okay. But two, they had this capacity to make sure that everyone believed the same thing. It was very important that everyone believed the same thing. Therefore, you had scientific controversies. Things moved away from science, where this really struck. So you've got these two things happening. Well, you've got Paul Platypus doesn't understand. It's got thousands, not hundreds of people with guns, shooting them and putting them in barrels and sending them back to Britain, and just people just going mad over it. But there are two aspects to it, that not only were there different views, the ability to process the view led into this very sort of strange behaviour. And obviously, as I look through, there's this seems to be the generic problem of what you think and how you integrate it into society and what it means, sort of from what point in this thinking pool do you go? Do you go from evidence, or do you go for rationality? Do you go for... There's almost another dimension about whether it is really important for it to be pan, the entire society to believe something. So, just going from the rationalist point of view, so there's two dimensions, but they're not necessarily on a sheet of paper dimensions. There are two dimensions here. There's one, the rationalist versus experiment. Do I do experiments and believe what's the results coming out and follow that? But it's sort of like democracy. A democracy in practice in your daily life. That's evidence-based things. It's not some sort of system to it. Or you've got this other thing of rationality. Now, rationality really came out in phases over thousands of years, starting with Plato and the New Platonists, and eventually Leibniz, who actually came out with the conclusion, starting with the basics of viewpoints. Listen to this, you may laugh at it. It's like, rubbish! This is rubbish. He said that Leibniz, he's a Kraut, or German, as you can say, and he's from It's of the year of, you think Mozart, that type of person, I think it was 1724, no, I've got Bacon and Lieber is mucked up, he's, George the First, he was the librarian of George the First, there you go, towards the end of his life, and he was too German for the English, so they just, and he offended Newton, which is really easy to do, in actual fact. You just have to be there to be offended by and then get attacked by Newton. It's better to realise. But Leibniz believe that if God is cool and God's really intelligent and he's a really nice guy, we are living in the best possible world. It's bad, but it's bad in the least bad way possible. And that even though people are really mean, they're only mean and bad within the least bad way. It's the best possible world. Now, and this is pure rationalism just gone bananas. Now, it's interesting that this pure rationalism led us to two things, digital numbers, and also led us to calculus, two main ingredients to get us to go forward, but also led to him believing in this. And this belief is not such a wacky belief, because a lot of people say, look, I believe in such and such an organisation. Obviously, I'm thinking of the education department. The education department, the individuals are capable of the worst crimes against education. Not crimes against humanity, crimes against education. They're just the worst possible things that you can think. Yet, they have an overriding belief that the education system is the best possible system, regardless. So it's the same Leibniz sort of, what do you call it? Leibniz. Gottfried Leibniz. I think we should have a term for this, benevolent naivety, something, naivety of benevolence, and then you can have some cynical offices, the opposite of cynicism. So you can have some really cynical people and benevolent naivists coming together, and they will actually work together on two levels. The cynical people will not actually reveal themselves to these benevolent people, and these benevolent people will struggle their entire life as captive slaves of these cynical people. So that's one dimension from looking at it from the experimental people who just pick up, a vase is broken, they pick up the pieces, work out what's done, sweep it up, no one gets hurt, and other people come in and argue who broke the vase, what does it mean, what does the vase symbolise, and of course, a lot of vases of value, constructed numbers, it goes all, you know, not constructed, like there's a complete imagination complex. With a lot of things people hold really fundamental, like personal liberty, that's a construct, or money, that's complete, I just saw a US Army, World War II Army Jeep go past. Okay, so I'm just going in here. So there's that entire dimension. Then there's the other dimension that, which is sort of like the perfect storm, the idea of a flock system having a cap on intelligence. So, flock system, and this is important, and we won't get a long time to talk about this. A flock system is a way of describing a situation, a market with, could be a market, a stock market, or it could be a group of birds or a shoal of fish. And the individual fish are not all that bright, but they know two things. They can't bump into a fish, and they can't be too close, and they can't be too far away from the next fish. And there's also a little bit of things of they don't like it, enough of them can sort of ease off until you get a general decision. So you get this large pool of fish or flock of birds, and they tend to fly, so they've got this intelligence, this distributed intelligence. And so you've got flock behavior, which is really good. It's good for avoiding predators, and it's also good for hunting. And in essence, you want to give your intellectual independent thought over to a leader. You want to actually succumb, cap your intelligence to operate within a flock. You have to have a limited intelligence, a limited acceptance of things. So if you are a bird and you work out the direction of north, and you go north, and the other flock is traveling northeast, right, you can be correct, but you'll leave the flock behind. You can try and push the flock, but overall you're just going to go away. And if you're a north going pigeon and that's not helpful, the flock will sometimes travel south to piss you off, to get rid of you. Now this is also true in belief systems. When you look at it, there are some good ideas, but the flock moves away, and you look at the tweets between the birds and stuff like that, and it varies much. It's, you're not a team player. You're too smart for the group. All this combination goes through in terms of that there is almost a necessary lack of ignorance. There is an optimal ignorance for a particular operation, and no doubt there is. There is indefinitely an optimal ignorance for flock operations. And if you are going to be a flock, give up now. You may as well just stay there. But and that's really happening in history. If you look at two countries going to war, right? Eventually, they get to after the war, say, they are racist, we weren't. They're bad, we weren't. Therefore, what happened here was just not two flocks bashing the stuffing out of each other, two 18-year-olds who had no ability. You know, one was dressed in an American uniform, one was dressed in a German uniform, one was dressed in a Russian uniform, and it is just very, very unlikely that any of them really fully understood Nazism, fascism, communism. They were just 18-year-old pimply people who had 18, you know, a simple thing, and given a gun and pushed across. But if you actually look at the military training, it's flock military training. It's the ability to sort of turn off the intellect and get going. Now this, these two combinations of things coming together. And the thing is that you can say, well, sort of from within that framework, you don't ask certain questions. So if you're in the bully Leibniz framework, you don't, you're saying, both those, the Leibniz and the naive people and the cynics go, what are you doing looking at evidence, you know, to go forward? You also have that in combination with the people of the flock mechanism of going across. And of course, the entire issue with this is the flock thinking, where you've got to actually limit your understanding. So you do something, but you have a limited rationality, a limited scope for it. So one of the things with a limited view is that there's a... Oh, I was trying to think. There's... that's trying to really, really think about. One of the things with a limited view is not entertaining alternative theories. So you've got all these things that a scientist does, evidence, entertains alternative theories, develops a sensitive model, which is coached within a spectrum of understanding. You know, it could be argument A or argument B. And then so rather than leap to the individual argument, you've got a linear line between the two arguments, and they form a space with which you navigate through. It's like a sea of propositions that you navigate across. And so you sort of, I don't know, I see sort of science more like as a sea, an ocean that you navigate, rather than islands of positions that you populate. So there's these great conflicts across, and of course, having seafaring people just do not work in that island view of things. So there's this natural conflict, and one of the things is, one upshot of it is that one thing that you would expect is someone from this other dimension will start seeing things differently. We'll start seeing a whole track of things saying, oh, look at that, you know that house that's burnt out over there, and this house over here, which is also burnt out over here, and this house, which is burnt out over here. Doesn't that suggest to you that some people have been burning houses? Whereas another viewpoint would be that house, the people in there were bad, and they did the wrong thing. They don't have to live there anymore. So what I'm talking about is these sort of behaviour, trying to look at the behaviour of these things. When I'm talking about burnt out house, I'm looking at these areas of research and endeavour which the flock has moved away from. So I'm looking at Math Simplified and going through there. I just happened to turn here, make sure I don't get killed on the way here. Yeah, I'm just looking at that. So this is the beauty of this podcast. I'm coming to the end of this, and whoops, is that right? Yeah. Okay, I have to say goodbye now. Bye. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.